they started teaching me about, like, you know, how I was going to run each day and, you know, day-to-day operations. At the end of the day, I had this huge migraine and I was like, man, I do not know if healthcare is for me.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation. New, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Welcome to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast, the podcast that brings innovations and best practices in healthcare to your podcasting app. I'm Adrienne, your host, and today I'm excited to be with two of my colleagues, Eunice and Gabe. And today we're going to talk about how do you build a strong working relationship between a provider and an MA or other support staff like a nurse, and really how, from both the perspective of somebody who's an MA and somebody who's a provider, how do you get the most out of DPI? I'll mention that you're going to hear me use the language MA or medical assistant. I know that some teams have LPNs, have nurses, have other support staff folks on them. I'm going to use MAs just to keep it simple. But know that this same advice would apply whether or not if you're an actual medical assistant or if you're an LPN or another type of a nurse. So without further ado, Eunice and Gabe, do you want to introduce yourselves to our podcast listeners?
Sure. My name is Eunice Simon. I'm from Oklahoma City and I'm a nurse practitioner by trade. And I have gone through DPI with the FQHC I was working with, and yeah, it turned out to be a huge success. I have so many lessons I've learned from that, and I'm excited to be on the podcast today.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gabriel Del Muro. I'm a trainer and coach here at Coleman Associates. A little bit like of me, it's also went through the DPI process back in 2012 in my past organization out of Chicago. And I'm super excited to be here. It was a huge success there. And I'm just, you know, excited to help others through Coleman.
And I have to say, this is Eunice's first appearance on the podcast, but we brought Gabe back by popular demand. So we're hoping to have him on here more. And I'm sure Eunice will become a more frequent guest as well. So where I would just want to start is, Eunice, you are a provider. Gabe, whenever you went through DPI, you were in the MA role. How do you get the most out of DPI from those roles?
What I would say is you have to be open-minded, right? I think part of being an MA, especially being a new MA, you have to find your role as far as like, what are some of these things that I have to do in the organization, right? So having your foundation, and it's hard being straight new and then working with Coleman, I think, you know, because you don't necessarily know your role yet internally, and then externally having someone else tell you this is what you should be doing as best practice, it's a lot and it could be overwhelming. But what I would say is be open mind and have that willingness to try different iterations of different things. The last thing you want to do is to say, no, well, I've tried this in the last, you know, job, or I tried this last time and it didn't work. Like, it doesn't have to be new and shiny, the tactics, right? But it has to be something that is well planned for and executed in order for it to be successful.
Yeah. And I agree with everything Gabe said. And what I would add is, you know, keeping the goals and the mission at the forefront of everything you do. And, you know, the bigger picture is that we want a better experience for the patient. So keeping everything patient-centered, keeping that at the forefront. And then another thing that I think will help you to get the most out of DPI is being honest and transparent as a team with each other. A lot of times you know, there's this hierarchy in medicine where, you know, the doctor is like at the top, you know, and so we're scared if you're the MA or if you're the front desk, you know, you're scared to kind of question things because you don't want to, like, you know, step on anyone's toes. But like, that's got to go out the window, because as an MA or as a support staff, you see things that the provider doesn't see. And so be honest and open about that. Be transparent, because remember, when you keep the patient at the center, when you keep the mission at the forefront, you've got to be able to get past that fear, you know, of like stepping on people's toes. If it's going to push the mission forward, if it's going to help you reach the goals.
And I love that you mentioned that, Yunez, because I don't think that anyone in healthcare or in any leadership position would be upset if you're doing the right thing for the patient, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be patient-centered and really looking as like being a patient advocate
right.
when you're working on the floor.
Do you all think that you can both be patient-centered and operate a super hierarchical care team? Do you think that those are mutually exclusive?
My answer might be different from yours, Gabe, but I don't think you can operate in that hierarchy structure and still be patient-centered. I think that, you know, you have to respect people's titles, respect everyone, like honor everyone. But if you're going to be patient-centered, the provider, and especially like people that have that higher title and role, have to be willing to have an open mind and respect what other care team members have to say, because, you know, you don't want to be like the ceiling for your organization's success. And so you have to be willing to have a humble attitude and listen to the people you work with.
Yeah, I agree with Eunice. I've seen where there's been highly effective teams that, you know, they respect everyone's title, but they're also like not above them or below them. They're right beside them. And I think that's what's needed, right? To be patient-centered, you can't necessarily say, well, I have this title, and you have to respect that. You know, I think respect comes, but you have to be willing to work together in order to achieve the results that you want, right? You can't be rowing in two different directions with your care team and then, you know, say we're patient-centered when you're really not.
And, you know, what I've noticed is that the higher up you go in your career, like in a title, it's harder for people to be honest with you because they're going to kind of tell you what you want to hear. And so you as a leader kind of set up that culture of being people of integrity and appreciating honest, truthful feedback from the people around you. And so, you know, as a provider, that means like letting go of that control of the schedule, or like letting go of the control to like, you know, want to run everything for the day, and like relinquishing that control and letting people make mistakes, but building up the people that you work with.
And I think when you think about like what you just said, Eunice, it's absolutely, you have to build your people up, especially again, going back to the new MA scenario, like a lot of those MAs are getting led by someone else, right? Like they're getting like the workflow is being taught and, you know, the way they should the way they should maneuver throughout the day. And I do think in order for you to have a high effective team, you have to have someone that puts in the work with them and say, hey, this is how we should practice together. This is what you should look for when you see certain things. You know, this is what I would do. Because a lot of that comes from, you know, a higher title to kind of empower you to do certain things. It just doesn't come naturally to some individuals. And it certainly doesn't come naturally when you're a new MA. You're still, again, you're figuring out your role.
How do you improve on the relationship between an MA and a provider? Where do you start if you're new to redesign and you're trying to build up this relationship between the MA and the provider?
I think your attitude starts. I think that's a huge foundation of, you know, building your relationship. You have to have the right attitude. You have to be coachable. You have to be someone that feels empowered as well. Not necessarily, you know, from the start, but later on, as you build this relationship, you have to build that trust, right? And that with trust comes empowerment to say, hey, you know what? I'm thinking about the, you know, sheep and shepherd model. When an MA leads their provider, that means that they trust each other. They have that foundation already built there. So I think when the first thing that you have to look at is like, how's the attitude? Do they work well together? You know, do they trust each other? If not, we have to work on those pieces in order to be a high effective team.
Yeah. And just to build off of what Gabe said, it's like the trusting each other is so huge. I know this is something that we practice even within our own group as Chispas, is like, being very honest about what our strengths and our weaknesses are, you know, and I think that is crucial. That vulnerability is crucial to establishing trust as a team and building that relationship as a care team, is like, you know, vocalizing like, hey, I'm going to need you to do this for me because that's kind of my blind spot. I naturally don't tend to, you know, see things like that. So being vulnerable, and then also, you know, like, you have to be on the same page as far as the mission and like what the goals are. Like you need to want the same things. And so I think another thing that can build that relationship is like, if, so for example, if I'm an MA, instead of like always coming with a complaint of things that are not working, come with a solution, right? Because there's a difference between, as a leader or as someone that's higher up, you want to listen to people that have a solution to the problems that they're seeing, not just listing out things that are wrong. And so, you know, there's a big difference between like a critical thinker and then just someone with a critical heart, you know? So it goes back to what Gabe was saying about like, you have to have the right attitude. And I think that's another thing that builds that trust, because when you bring the things that you're noticing that are wrong, but then you bring a solution to it, it shows that you care about the mission. You know, you want the improvement. You want the betterment of the patient. I know another thing that helps, like, especially when you're leading up and managing up, is like when you kind of know the rhythms and the cadences of the people that you like work with or serve under, you know, and that kind of helps you to know like, okay, yeah, this is a good time to talk to them. So that, I feel like that's such a good quality of someone that wants to lead up, is like they know kind of the dynamics of how that person works and functions, you know, and they kind of use that and they leverage that knowledge of that person to like, okay, yeah, this would be a good time, or this is the right way to say this. They receive information better in this. They know how to get that information across and the way that their leader can take it.
Yeah. So you have both been through this on the other side. And so I think people would just like to really hear kind of what your stories are. And so maybe Eunice, if you want to start about kind of how you built up your MA as a shepherd and what pitfalls you had and what you would do differently next time.
So I was really blessed to have an MA that was already so sharp. And, you know, usually in the MA role, you do have to be very sharp and smart. But she was already a person that naturally looked at things that I wasn't looking at. Where I think I was able to build her up was kind of giving her the clinical side of the things that I'm looking for, like when she does visit prep. In the beginning, what that meant for me is that I had to kind of invest that time up front to show her, you know, exactly what I'm looking for whenever I want to be given information about a patient. I would let her run huddles. I would point out when she did something exceptionally well. And then I would help her by connecting the dots throughout the day. Hey, you know, I'm so glad you warned me about this. We saved so much time because you prepared me. And just helping her to understand like how, you know, what she's doing helps with a bigger picture.
I always share this story about when I first started as an MA, we were so dysfunctional in our health center. And I mean this like with, you know, like wholeheartedly and, you know, not in any malicious way, but we were super dysfunctional. We just didn't have the right process. Again, it wasn't us. It was a process. And a lot of you out there are like, oh, yeah, we're dysfunctional as well, or that kind of resonates. But it's not necessarily you all. It's like where you live and like the whole process that's been put in place for you all. But I remember walking the first day as an MA. They started teaching me about like, you know, how I was going to run each day and, you know, day-to-day operations. At the end of the day, I had this huge migraine. And I was like, man, I do not know if healthcare is for me. I said, but I'll give it a good solid shot because I have never liked quitting on things that I start. So I said, I'll give it a good, you know, 6 months. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. I'll just kind of like look for a different industry. And at first it wasn't working out. I was just like, I hated my life. You know, there was no sort of like process in place that kind of set me up for success. It was more of like sink or swim type of thing. Like I remember there was, I think, 10 providers, only 3 MAs. And we used to work in this U-shaped type of format with the rooms. And I remember like the stacks of the paper charts that were just like stacking up, the patients were here. And I was just like, oh, geez, like things hitting the fan right now, right? So we started rooming them and whatnot. You know, we got through the day. But I remember thinking to myself, like, there has to be a better way. There's no way this is the best way. Like, there has to be a better way. So luckily enough, we met Coleman. I remember meeting Amanda and Melissa at one of these learning sessions and hearing what we were going to be doing. Again, you know, doing patient visit trackings and mystery shopper calls. But at first, I didn't like click it right away. I was like, dude, what the hell is going on? Like, I don't remember like doing any of this in any other like facility or anyone explaining this before. And, you know, it was all new to us. But I remember then hearing the concepts of what we were testing. I was like, this is exactly what we need. And sure, it was. It was exactly what that organization needed. You know, we worked with Coleman for 4 years with 4 different waves for 36 sites. So it was a huge success there, you know, and I was a patient before I was an employee. So, you know, giving it back to that, to our community and making sure that everyone received good quality care. Again, you know, healthcare is a human health right, not a privilege. So making sure that everyone received that high quality care was awesome. I see them now, like just their whole transformation was amazing. But yeah, but it was rough. And, you know, the roughest part was learning a new way that I had to think about when I was kind of like set up for just kind of maneuvering or sink to swim type of situation, right? So even for an MA, you have to work very well with your provider. And by I mean very well, you just have to be, you don't have to be best friends, but you do have to be close when you're in a working environment to have that relationship so you guys can build a foundation and really trust each other to keep moving forward throughout the day. Because ultimately, you're going to get curveballs all the time. It's like this, there's no unicorns and rainbows and, you know, sunny days all the time. That's none of that, especially not in healthcare, right? Like you have a patient that walks in as a train wreck and you have to make sure that you provide good quality care. But I remember also having a good relationship with the provider. Her name was Talia, and we were so good together that at the end, like, I would interpret with her, but I already knew her plan. So sometimes she would just look at me and not even finish the consultation. She's like, well, I'm just going to chart. Can you just give him our spiel? And I said, okay. So it was super functional, but we had to build that trust, and it wasn't built overnight. It definitely took some years, but we got to a really good, solid place.
Well, I think we're all grateful that you didn't let that first migraine kick you out of healthcare game. It's very happy to have you. From an MA perspective, what if your provider doesn't want to try something different? And from a provider perspective, what do you do if your MA doesn't want to try something different?
Part of it is if you have a good relationship with them, you have to understand why, right? Like there's always a reason behind why they don't want to try the new things or why they're resistant or skeptical or whatever. Label it whatever you want, but you have to find out the why. And then it's not only listening, but understanding and then, you know, coming up with a solution like, all right, maybe we can't do this right off the bat, but what are some of the things that we have to do in order for you to get there, right? Like I remember the provider would tell me, because she was pretty quick, and she would say, hey, don't midway knock me. I don't need it. You know, I'm fast enough. I said, yeah, you're fast enough, but then I can't catch up with what I need to do next steps with that patient. So it's not necessarily for you, but it's for me.
Yeah.
Or if there's another way that we can communicate, I just need to know, like, what are some next steps? Because I still have to room the next patient. So it's either I put in the time in now or time in later, but it's always going to affect us both. So we have to figure something out in order for us to keep moving. So then after I mentioned that, she understood that it wasn't necessarily for me to interrupt her or to kind of like tell her to go even faster. It was just for me to understand what had to happen with the patient after she was done. So I think that kind of clicked for her. I don't know, Eunice, if you have any other suggestions or any, you know, like examples.
Yeah, I think it's harder when you're a provider that's resistant because I actually was that provider that was resistant to midway knocks. I was like, there's no point in midway knocks. Like, I just did not see the value in that at all. As a DPI team, we were like, we're not going to knock an idea until we try it. So it was just a humbling thing for me to be like, fine, I just have to say that I tried it and I tried it. And I didn't try it just once. I tried it a few times until I was like, wow, I can see some value in this. And so I think humility is really important working in any profession, but especially in a service profession. Is like, you have to be willing to change. Change is hard, but you have to be willing to realize that sometimes change is what you need, even though you don't think you need it.
I'm just thinking about what Gabe said about, you know, doing interpreting for your provider and how you were a patient before you were a MA, Gabe. And I think it's a really important point that oftentimes in health centers, not always, but a lot of the time, MAs are much closer to the community than the providers that are working in the health center. And so I guess, what do you think that care teams and providers in particular miss if they're not utilizing the community-centeredness that a lot of MAs and front desk staff, call center staff bring to the team?
I think the understanding, right? I think a big part of it, it's understanding the patient's shoes and perspectives. Like I remember, you know, advocating for the patients because, you know, if I don't do it, no one else is going to do it. We have to be that patient advocate to say, yes, I understand where you're coming from. And here is the consequences if we keep going the same route, right? Like there's a lot of things like culturally, like, you know, that Hispanics or Mexicans, for example, for myself, that we eat. And then, you know, we have this tendency of saying, oh, well, you know, just the medicine will take care of that. But it's not just that, right? It's your diet and the medication. Just the medication can't be the only thing that is going to help you. You have to put some, you know, work in yourself. And having those conversations with the patient, having them understand why that's, you know, something that they have to take in consideration and not just kind of like throw a blanket over and say, well, I'll disappear with this, you know, magic pill. I think I've seen it on the other side where providers don't necessarily understand the patient and say, well, I already gave this patient their insulin and they're so not compliant. They're taking it, but, you know, I don't see any improvements. And it's, again, part of, you know, medication is one thing and the patient effort is another, but it's also like having those resources to give it to the patients and say, hey, this is how we can help you. Here's some nutritional resources that you can take, or we're going to have some group classes or group visits with a nutrition, like come in and we'll show you, you know, what are some of the foods that you should be taking. So yeah, I think for me, it's more of like, I've been in both roles of being in the health center and also being a patient and understanding from both perspectives, but there needs to be this like bridge that everyone walks to kind of understand why we're in this together. You know, part of it is in the health center, providers providing quality care, and some patients, you know, disregard that by not necessarily because they want to, but it's because they don't know anything different, right? We have to teach them. So that's also a responsibility that we have to take and embrace.
Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of DPI and doing things like a huddle and visit prep and robust confirmation calls is that, you know, the MA or the front desk, whoever's doing those confirmation calls and doing the visit prep, they are gathering information and they are communicating with the patient and finding out barriers to health, whether it's a transportation difficulty or whether it's food insecurity or whatever it is. Like as they're doing the intake, they're learning so much valuable information about the patient. It is so needed for the provider to understand the patient from a whole perspective and not just, well, you didn't do what I told you to do last time. You know, because, and that's where the MA like brings in that valuable knowledge about what they learned. And then not just the MA, but even the front desk and ancillary staff, like the social worker or even a pharmacist that's consulting with the patient on their medications. Everyone brings a valuable piece to the table. And that's where like you need that teamwork. It can't be this provider centric, you know, hierarchy where only the provider has all the valuable information.
Yeah. Do you all have any other advice you'd like to give to our listeners?
I guess for me, for the MAs is if you're new and if you're hearing this or you just kind of stumbled upon this podcast, is healthcare is always changing, right? And we have to adapt with it. But at the same time, it's you have to be open of trying new things. You know, something, it doesn't have to be new and shiny. Maybe, you know, it's like a bad diet. You set it up, but you didn't set it up so well, so it didn't necessarily work. Same thing here, you know, you have to make sure it's well executed in order for this thing to work. But just to really be candid is also you provide a lot of value to the providers and to the patients, and you have that and you should feel empowered to say, no, let's see this patient first. And, you know, we'll move along because you're the first line that's hearing what the patient needs, right? Like there's always things that patients are going to throw curveballs, but for the most part, if you have a good relationship with the patients, they'll tell you exactly what they're there for. So, you know, just making sure that you feel empowered to know that you could maneuver the day, even with the provider and telling them where, you know, they should go next. But it's also asking a lot of good, high quality questions to your provider so you can feel empowered to do some of these things. don't feel that if you don't necessarily know the answer that you shouldn't ask it or find a different source because you're, you know, shy of asking them. Like, that's what they're there for. And really, if you guys are a good, effective team, at the end of the day, you guys are going to see and have good quality care, right? You're going to be productive and you're going to go home on time. But you can't necessarily do that if you don't have the knowledge and you're spending a lot of the time looking for resources when you have a great resource at the health center.
Yep. And then what I would add is just from a provider standpoint, I think providers are the natural leaders of a care team where because of their knowledge, because of their clinical experience and stuff, they're already respected and given that leadership, even though it's not a title, it's like this understood thing, but good leaders always focus on developing people. And I think this is like a balancing act of a provider is that, yes, you're there to take care of a patient, but you're also there to build up the people around you because you know that you're going to be at your maximum output of your maximum potential when you utilize the giftings and the skills of everyone around you. And so you want to be careful, like not to be a leader that's like critical or like too controlling or avoidant or like you're always coming to the rescue of your people. You want to build them up, trust them to do things, stay engaged, know the happenings, like truly care about the people you work with, be humble enough to listen to what they have to say. And like Gabe said, ask the right questions to pull that information out of them, to grow them as a thinker. And that's what I would add from a provider standpoint.
Thanks so much to Gabe and to Eunice for sharing with us from their perspective as a provider and a former MA about how to work better together, but also really how to get the most out of DPI and to get the most out for yourself, to like really grow you in your own profession. I love how we're talking about really breaking down hierarchies and thinking about how we can provide the best care for patients, but also the best experience for everybody on the team. So thanks so much to those guys for joining us today. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, shoot us an email at notify@ColemanAssociates.com or reach out to us on social media. If you like the show, please go on to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. That really helps other people to find us. To keep up with all the Chispa happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. Shout out to Jonathan at Bionic Squid for all of his podcasting help, and we'll see you next time.